T-Wolves acquiring Prince for number 16 from the Bulls, for number 7, Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, and a pick! I swear to God, I need to retire being a fan of this f***ing team!
The Debatables, part of the Almighty Baller Radio Network.
Jimmy Butler has been sent, reunited with his former coach Tom Thibodeau in Minnesota. In the deal, Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, and the number 7 pick go to Chicago.
You know, when you look at it, we got 3 lottery picks out of it and young guys that we're jump-starting this thing with. So,
talking about the Chicago Bulls and NBA, your best source for coverage from the Madhouse on Madison.
You see, at the end of the day, we have executives in this league who are putting their personal feelings above a franchise, the health of a franchise, and more importantly, what the fan base wants.
In one corner, host Jordan Malley.
Your second move in a rebuild after trading Jimmy Butler is getting rid of a pick, which honestly, Jordan Bell was a steal at 38. Like, I for sure thought he was going to be a first-round pick. For sure, 100%. And he somehow fell to the Bulls at 38, and then you sold him for cash. Cash in a rebuild. Who does that?
And in the other corner, co-host Matt Peck.
Tom Hanks movie, Castaway, right? Where he gets stranded on that desert island, or that, like, you know, rock island in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. There's a one scene where he's in the cave and he's like talking to Wilson, or, you know, like having a one-sided conversation with Wilson the volleyball. And he's like, look, I'd rather take my chances out there on the ocean than sit here and die on this godforsaken rock talking to this volleyball. The Bulls, in their up until trading Jimmy Butler for the past few seasons, were Tom Hanks on that rock in the middle of the ocean talking to a goddamn volleyball. They were going nowhere. They were doing nothing. They were just barely surviving. Now, at least, they have decided to build a raft and take their chances out in the open ocean.
Kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
We are in a position where we have to do what we feel is right. And tonight, we made a decision to change direction. We've defined our path, and we're going to go that direction. And so,
they need to fire the f***ing guard packs! They need to fire them!
The Debatables starts now.
What's up and welcome into the Debatables, brought to you by Almighty Baller Radio. My name is Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We are live on Dash Radio and so happy to be here broadcasting on the Almighty Baller channel, where basketball is always being discussed. We are live every Thursday from 6 to 7 a.m. and 11 to noon Central Time. Follow us on Twitter at Debatables and all of our content at almightyballer.com. So, this has been the first full week into a Chicago Bulls rebuild, and sort of got a chance to digest everything that happened post-draft night. Kind of got reactions all around the city and even around the NBA, people reacting to this. And I think the message has been clear. I don't know about you, Matt, but more and more as we've gone on, and it's been about almost a week now since this trade, exactly a week since this trade's been pulled off. And I feel like, for the most part, Bulls fans are upset, and they actually took the turn that I actually was surprised that a lot of Bulls fans were more mad than we were, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, well, I feel like, Jordan, people who listen to our podcast and our show know that neither of us have been very happy with what the front office has done over the last couple of years, and that's why they found themselves in this unfortunate position where they were forced to choose between keeping Butler on a mediocre team and then in a couple of years asking themselves if they wanted to pay him $250 million in the back half of his career when he's ages 30 to 35, or trade him now, start a rebuild, and probably not get an equal haul in return. Those were their choices. They chose option B, to start this rebuild. So while I don't have a whole lot of respect for the things that this front office has done, and they have made plenty of missteps in the past few years, at least this was them picking a lane. And look, am I excited about a rebuild? No. But am I excited that they finally chose a fucking lane? Yeah, you better believe I'm excited about that. I did not want to watch Butler, Wade, Rondo, and a bunch of scrubs you know, try to get 40 wins again next season. Where does that get you? Gets you nowhere. So I understand that Bulls fans are upset because they feel like we got robbed in the trade and obviously was not equal value. Jimmy Butler's a top 15 player in the league. Some would say because of his defensive abilities, arguably top 10. And the pieces you got do not equal up to Butler. But you know what? That never happens. So accept it, move on, and hopefully the front office makes better decisions from here on out.
This is the one thing that I was thinking about when before we've hopped on again, so it's been about a week. I was thinking about the value that Butler actually brings as far as around the league. Like, what do people actually think about Butler in regards to how he plays and the way he acts, the way he runs the team now that they've seen it for two seasons? I would say one full season for Jimmy. But I feel like there's this perception that even though Butler was third team All-NBA this year, it seems like he has reached superstardom. It doesn't seem like front offices and ownership really feel like Jimmy Butler's a guy that, like, we felt had that type of value that, you know, where a lot of Bulls fans think we got ripped off, which in return maybe we did, but at the same time, none of us really know if we had other offers on the table. I mean, if that's truly the only offer that was out there for Butler, regardless, you should at least be happy, like you said, that we picked Elaine, and I think we're both more ecstatic about that than anything else.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of speculation about other offers that were on the table, but we really have no conclusive evidence that such offers were on the table. We did find out fairly conclusively from reliable sources that the Celtics were not willing to part with their number 3 overall pick in this draft that just happened a couple of weeks ago, and they were not willing to part with the Brooklyn Nets pick next year. So if the Bulls weren't able to get either of those pieces and were demanding at least one of those from Boston, boom, there you go. That trade talk is dead. There was also talk about maybe talking with Phoenix, looking for the number 4 overall pick and Eric Bledsoe as some kind of package. We don't know if that was ever officially offered to the Bulls. And I think if it was, they took the better offer with Minnesota because they got 3 pieces instead of 2. You could say, well, maybe if they have that pick at number 4, they get Josh Jackson. Maybe you want Josh Jackson more than you want Lauri Markkanen. All right, fine. Like, maybe you can make that argument, but I think getting 3 pieces is better than getting 2. And I feel like Bulls fans were just conjuring up these false packages that were like, well, why didn't Garpax take a better deal? Because there wasn't a better deal on the table. They said on Friday when they were making their rounds, doing in their interviews, they were surprised by how small the market for Butler was. And as you mentioned, the fact that he's an All-NBA player now, it kind of sucks that the market was that small. But if the market is that small and you've decided to trade him, you got to take what you can get because that value will only get smaller the longer they wait. Just look what happened with DeMarcus Cousins in Sacramento. They waited until the last final moment of do we trade this guy or not, and they got peanuts for him.
Yeah, and the Bulls are infamous for doing that. Like, they are so famous for holding on to their stars or holding on to players with actual value until the point where they can't get anything for them. And I think it's spot on. We both said it. I think this is really this is one of the truthful things that the front office is telling us, is that this was really the only deal on the table. I did hear that there was the Suns and the Cleveland 3-way trade was actually legitimate, and if Cleveland's front office wasn't a dumpster fire, that might have turned into something. But
Phoenix didn't want Kevin Love, and that would have had to happen for the Cavs to free up the kind of, you know, stuff that the Bulls would want to get in that 3-team trade.
So that's the only possibility that could have been on the table. And that's, like you said, that wasn't even a done deal. It was serious talks, but what are really serious talks? And nowadays we've seen things that have fizzled out that were serious talks all the time in pro sports. So I don't know. I don't think from what I heard at the press conference when the Bulls introduced all 3 of these guys, I didn't hear anything like things that I would think, okay, we're already starting off on a bad foot. I liked a lot of the responses that Chris Dunn, Lauri Markkanen, and Zach LaVine had to say, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, but Zach LaVine, I listened to 2 interviews with him already outside his press conference. He seems like a guy that Chicago is going to love.
I'm feeling really good attacking this injury. Like I do everything in life. Working my butt off for it every day in the gym, doing as much possible. You know, there's always that base timeline, you know, 9 to 12 months with it. You know, I feel like with my ability, I'm always able to come back early, but I really haven't set a timetable for that. But, you know, I'm very confident I'm going to come back better than I have. And it's given me time to work on my mental game, my strength, and, you know, just learn the game of basketball more. So you know, I have no fear at all, you know, coming back from this.
I think so, too. And also, I mean, Tom Thibodeau obviously has done a whole lot of PR in the last few days, the past week, after pulling off such a huge deal. And Tom Thibodeau, who Bulls fans know, and most of whom Bulls fans, you know, trust his opinion, at least maybe some of them had issues with, you know, oh, play this guy too many minutes or whatever, but they know exactly how smart of a basketball mind Tom Thibodeau has, and he is a great judge of character and talent. Tibbs was speaking glowing remarks about Zach LaVine all over his PR tour over the past week and how much it hurt to give him up. So obviously the scare is how this ACL tear recovery is going to go. Tom Thibodeau and everybody in Minnesota's camp was very confident in saying that he is on schedule, if not ahead of schedule. Hopefully that's the case. You never really know what you're going to get until you see the guy out on the floor playing full speed, 5-on-5 in an NBA game, and that's still months and months away. But you think about the fact that between the pieces they got, obviously Markkanen is the youngest, a one-and-done college player, but even though Zach LaVine has 3 years of NBA experience, he's younger than Chris Dunn. He's still 22. Chris Dunn is 23. So between his athletic versatility and what he can bring to the Bulls offensively, I'm optimistic that if his ACL recovery goes well, LaVine can be a great piece for the Bulls moving forward. On the defensive side, that's a whole other story. That kid's defense is a nightmare.
Yeah. Well, at least, I mean, yeah, that's something that's is going to be bad for Bulls fans to watch. But, I mean, at least for something to hold on to a little bit is that Fred Hoiberg's system isn't necessarily defensively dominant. Or, like, you know, like
no,
Tom Thibodeau's...
not at all. Not at all. There's not just not defensively dominant. There's no defense to be found anywhere.
So, at least now we can go from being some meddling team to actually formulating an offense. And I think the defense can come later. I mean, I don't have a problem with any of the three guys that came in. We said that last week on the show. I think you've got to give these guys an opportunity, and this is legitimately what I want. I'm more excited to watch young guys go out there and play every night, get legitimate minutes, and see what we're going to get. And because, you know what? Worst case scenario, we're really awful for a year, and we get a top three pick. And like we talked before on last show, you get one of those guys, a Michael Porter Jr., something like that, to add to really jumpstart this rebuild. And I don't think another thing that I want to talk about with the Zach LaVine thing, too, I don't think it's fair to do the Derrick Rose comparison. That's so just not even fair to do it with Zach LaVine. I get it. They both tore ACLs, but those are two completely different situations and at different ages. So I just think it's too quick for Bulls fans to do that type of comparison right now. Don't put yourself in that mindset.
Yeah, I mean, like Russell Westbrook had a severe knee injury around the same time as Derrick Rose. And look what Westbrook is doing now. Just won league MVP, first triple-double average since the early 60s. I mean, you can never be too sure how an ACL recovery is going to go. And obviously, it's a case-by-case situation. So you're right. I mean, don't just assume that it's going to go horribly because Derrick Rose's, you know, the last final few years of Derrick Rose's Bulls career went horribly after he tore the ACL because there were subsequent MCL tears and MCL shaving surgeries and all that kind of shit. Like, it's a case-by-case basis, and hopefully Zach LaVine bounces back strong. I mean, when it's hard to find things to be optimistic about in this current Bulls situation at the staring down the barrel of a full-fledged rebuild, be optimistic that Zach LaVine's going to come back healthy and look good next season, because that's one of a few things we can be optimistic about.
Yeah, and another thing on the Derrick Rose thing, too, I don't know. I don't know what, like, you don't even know what their work ethic is like. You can't compare the two. I mean, we don't really know a whole lot about Zach LaVine, and to compare him to the work ethic maybe of Derrick Rose's and the way that they both are trying to recover from a knee injury, I think is so different. And like you said, brought up Russell Westbrook too. That's like the perfect, you know, glass half full, glass half empty kind of thing. You can look at Russell Westbrook, you look at Derrick Rose. So for Bulls fans, I can see why you would want to look at Derrick Rose, but I would say let's keep it on the optimistic side for right now. For you, what was something positive that you heard from this press conference? If people didn't get to catch it, what was something that stood out to you?
Well, I did like a lot of what the rookie Markkanen had to say, because he was grilled, asked a lot of tough questions. People in Chicago saying, "Yeah, people are just comparing you to another Nico Mirotić," and there's some snark among Chicago media as far as how effective or ineffective Nico's been through three seasons, and it seems like it's silly to re-sign him on a significant contract if you just drafted this kid from Zona. That's a different story, but he seemed like a really confident kid, and says he's excited to be here. Chicago says, he said Chicago is a very familiar feeling already to him after being here for just a few days. Thinks he's going to be really comfortable here. When the Bulls traded up to number seven, I was like, all right, well, Markkanen's the most logical pick. So at least Gar and Pax figured that much out, that this obviously is the stretch four, the legit seven-footer stretch four that you want for Fred Hoiberg's offense. And with all the questions that were thrown at Markkanen in that interview on, what was that, Tuesday, I was pleased with his confidence.
Do you think that Fred Hoiberg, now that he's got this young team, especially he's got a young point guard in Chris Dunn, who had, not such a great rookie year, I feel like that's priority number one for him, and I feel like that's going to be something that Fred Hoiberg, if anything, is going to come out and say, all right, this is the guy that I want to develop. Because with LaVine, you already know the superstardom, that the potential that's there. And with Markkanen, he's a number seven pick. That's another guy you could develop. But I feel like for Fred Hoiberg to really kickstart this rebuild and have the team that he wants to have a point guard that's consistent and legitimate. And this might be something to look at and to focus on a little bit more as far as what you're actually going to get out of your coach for the next, 3 years he's got left on his deal?
Yeah, that's the one thing that I'm worried about. And that was the one part of the press conference when they introduced these three new guys that I didn't like. Because I can't remember who it was, but somebody in that room among the media asked a very good question, which was, now that you're rebuilding and you got all these young pieces, you said in your season-ending press conference that young player development is going to be key moving forward. What specifically are you guys confident about as far as how you are going to craft this young roster moving forward? Because we have seen a lack of young player development over the past few seasons. A great question. And in my opinion, the most important matter facing this Bulls rebuild right now. And they basically didn't have an answer for that. I can't remember who took the question, if it was Paxson or if it was Gar, or if it was even Fred. I think Fred also touched on that as well, but they basically just spouted out some random nonsense and some fluff speak, but there was no substance to what they were saying, and based on the lack of player development we've seen in recent seasons, that's the thing I am most worried about. Yeah, okay, Zach LaVine's got potential. Chris Dunn's got potential. Lauri Markkanen has potential. Who are the coaches that are going to make them better NBA players in their early 20s? Because that to me is like, well, I have no faith in that.
And what's funny is I think that's why they're pushing to do this whole not pick up Rondo's option and then try to re-sign him for less money, be sort of a teacher for some of these young guys and these young point guards, which, in essence, it's a good idea, it's a good thought, but is that really how this is going to translate? Like, I know we saw last year that Rondo was the guy that stuck up for the young guys and was there in their back pocket, but if Rondo's legitimately trying to be a coach when he retires, and that this is a path that he's going on, and this is kind of the consistency that we're going to see from him in being able to develop some of these guys, then hell yeah, fine, keep Rondo around. But I would hope that then there is some type of balance between him and Fred Hoiberg to try and develop either Campaign or Chris Dunn, because believe it or not, Bulls fans, right now, that's your future right now, is Chris Dunn or Cameron Payne running your offense here. And you could throw Jerry and Grant in there too. That's not anything to get really excited about. I think the guy that you want to get excited about is Chris Dunn over Cameron Payne and Jerry Grant. But what a thought. Our starting point guards next year are potentially Chris Dunn and then having Cameron Payne come off and take the rest of the
minutes. Obviously paying Rondo close to $14 million for a season on a rebuilding team to be a leader, that's a lot of money to spend on a basically just a locker room guy. But at the same time, if they do want to try to renegotiate with Rondo to keep him on board, I'd be fine with that, because as much bad press as Rondo gets, and as much as people generically on the NBA landscape see him as a locker room problem, all of the young guys on that Bulls roster last season absolutely loved him and talked about how much they appreciated his leadership. Dwayne Wade, I'm sorry. Like, dude, if you want to, you know, figure out some kind of new buyout deal with the Bulls so you can get out of town because you don't want to be here, that's fine. Because in my opinion, Dwayne Wade did not show a hell of a lot of great leadership last season. He just called out the young kids when he's the one dogging it on defense all night, every night. Like, dude, no. Rondo was actually there leading from the get-go. He was there helping him out in summer league last season. So I'm not really excited about the idea of Cameron Payne or Chris Dunn starting at point guard for us next season, but I'm more than okay with the idea of having Rondo on that bench as sort of a player coach serving that kind of role. I think that would be a good thing for this young Bulls team because, as going back to what I was talking about earlier in young player development, I'm sorry, Fred, I have no faith in you. I have not seen any improvements on any of the young kids in your 2 years at the helm on this Bulls team. Haven't seen it.
Yeah, and well, there's not really a get out either. There's no excuse built in anymore that they're not constructing a team that you're supposed to be able to build with, because here it is now, and it's not necessarily the group that you'd want to start with, especially if you're a coach now and you're going to be in your third year coaching. This isn't exactly what you asked for, but in essence, now this is what you've got to work for, and you've got to show that you're a legitimate NBA coach. You could stick around for a while. Like, it, ultimately, that's what it comes down to for me with this front office. If you're thinking about it all together, big picture here is, what did the Bulls choose? Did the Bulls choose their star player that fans loved and we're going to build around him, or did they choose the coach that Gar Foreman and John Paxson like? Which one did they pick? They picked Fred Hoiberg. And so now they put all their chips in the middle on young guys, on Fred Hoiberg. Clock is ticking for the front office, and clock is ticking on Fred Hoiberg. So I think this is going to be, now I give them 3 years, this ride Fred Hoiberg's contract out. If there's any type of development with any of these young guys, I could probably see an extension for Fred Hoiberg, and that's the scary part, is the positive. If you see any type of leaning towards the positive, the upspring in this team, you're going to see this guy come back, and you're probably going to see the front office come back if things start to turn around just a little bit because of loyalty.
Yeah, and that's the really interesting thing to me as we talk about what the Bulls are going to do not only next season but the seasons thereafter in this rebuild, and whether or not Fred Hoiberg will be involved, is the corresponding timeline of the life of Jerry Reinsdorf. And I know it sounds morbid, but he's, you know, approaching his mid-80s at this point. His son Michael seems to be at least somewhat less loyal to guys like John Paxson and Gar Foreman. If after betting on themselves, and that's what they did, as Jordan, you mentioned, them deciding to go with Hoiberg and not Jimmy Butler, the Bulls front office, which is already should be on a very hot seat for all of their missteps in recent seasons, has now said, we believe in our process, we believe in our guy Fred Hoiberg, and we're going to get this back on track, we're going to start this rebuild. How much of that is Jerry Reinsdorf alive for? Because if he isn't around in a few years, say Fred Hoiberg gets into the fourth year or even fifth year of this current contract, and this Bulls rebuild doesn't seem to be going anywhere fruitful, does Michael Reinsdorf say, all right, guys, enough is enough, and we finally get ourselves a new front office that the Bulls fans have been clamoring for years now? Maybe.
I think it's just so weird, and it's still the question that me and you and no Bulls fans can really figure out, or anybody in the media, is like, what don't they understand that the fans, like, how is the fans the only ones that, in the media, the only ones seeing what this Bulls team is doing? But, like, besides a handful of other teams in the NBA, the Bulls are kind of a joke. Like, if you look at it, the way that they ran with their stars, it's a joke. I mean, you ran out one of the best coaches in Tom Thibodeau. You ran Derrick Rose out unfairly out of Chicago.
Whoa. Let's be real. That Derrick Rose trade was a long time coming. They needed to move
on. No, I'll agree with you that, but the things leading up to that trade, I'm talking about, like, maybe 2 years before, you know, the front office, everybody couldn't wait to smack Derrick Rose in the back and push him out. and say, all right, it's Jimmy's team.
Well, I think they were really frustrated with the fact that Derrick Rose and even perhaps more significantly his brother Reggie were being kind of a pain in the ass about whether or not he was going to play and when he was ready to play and when could he play and when could he not play. And look, I was a Derrick Rose defender for a very long time up until, you know, as they were getting ready to trade him, I was thinking, you know what, this moment in time, you know, a little over a year ago, it's time. They got to move on from D Rose. But I was a big defender. But put yourself in their shoes. They signed this guy to a max contract. He's wishy washy about whether or not he wants to play. Is he ready to play? Is he healthy? All these surgeries. Like, you can only fault Garpak so much for the fact that Derrick Rose's Bulls career came to a screeching halt after he became the youngest MVP in league history.
Right. Okay. I'll give you that. My thing was mostly that they don't stick up for the people that are the most valuable in their franchise. Like, for a lot of the time, they criticized Derrick Rose, a lot of the criticism was rightfully so. And I was with you, and I'm still with you on that point. That it, towards the end of his career with the Bulls, it was every night, is Derrick Rose going to play? I don't know. Nobody knows. Nobody knows till tip off. Oh, Derrick Rose is not playing. Oh, maybe he'll come back next game. Oh, it's the same thing over and over and over again. And people got sick of that. And I get that. And from the front office standpoint, I understand that too. I just think if from a player's standpoint and looking at star players and guys that are going to develop in this city, you look at the front office and what they did to Derrick Rose, and you look at the front office and now what they've done to Jimmy Butler and kind of the backhands that they gave Jimmy Butler as he walked out the door. It's kind of unfair. And like the players, like there's players out there that probably were like, all right, there's 29, 30 other front offices in the NBA that all I'd rather go to than have to deal with these eggheads up in the front office that aren't going to defend me and push me out as soon as they get something a little bit more valuable.
No, there's certainly truth to that. And you look at the tweet that Jimmy Butler's trainer, Travell Gaines, put out like the night that he got traded. And
that
it was
clowning,
you know, like,
way.
Worst, you know, worst front office I've ever worked with. Like, I've met drug dealers that are more trustworthy or honorable. I can't remember the adjective he used to describe Gar, but it was like, you know, I've met drug dealers that are more trustworthy than this guy. You know, worst organization ever I've ever worked with. What a joke. And obviously other players around the NBA and other players that Travell Gaines has worked with or known in his career as an NBA trainer, like, they hear that stuff. Yeah, it was an angry, heat-of-the-moment tweet, but they hear that stuff, and that's clearly not the only example of somebody that is tied to the Bulls organization in some level of professionalism saying, this team is not run well. There are not many teams out there that are currently being run more poorly than the Chicago Bulls. And it's hard to argue that.
So talking along those lines, it's funny because now for people who don't know, like people that are like, oh, well, you guys are saying that they slandered Jimmy Butler as he walked out the door. It's true. If you didn't get a chance to catch any of the press conferences or any of the interviews that Garpax has done over the past 10 days, there's been a lot of truths that have come out. And it seems like that the front office was sort of sick of the way Jimmy Butler was playing. The star, like the Hollywood Jimmy persona, was kind of growing old. And for a lot of that, I feel like the front office switched after Derrick Rose left and Jimmy Butler was given the keys to the Bulls. His persona changed, and that sort of that locker room energy changed at the same time. And I think a lot of personnel, a lot of media members, a lot of people that are around Chicago all the time kind of saw as he was going out the door. But I just think he was just the tone that it was given, and even though that they spouted off that, you know, Jimmy was a class act, blah 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 blah, all the regular things you're going to hear a GM say when a star leaves,
right, the generic niceties
of, yeah, but it was kind of like in a tone that was sort of fake, that I was like, all right, there's something more to this that either we don't know that they shipped him out, or I just didn't feel altogether there with the front office just kind of cutting ties. It just didn't seem
well,
right.
And look, and you need to read between the lines. And I actually I put an article up on Tuesday after that press conference where they introduced the young guys, talking about a backhanded, like, sort of, it was a slightly veiled dig at Jimmy Butler from John Paxson. But if you read between the lines, it very much is a dig at Butler, because they were talking about whether or not to bring back Rondo and Wade, and Paxson's response was talking about, you know, wanting some kind of veteran leadership to, you know, to be around the young guys. And this is what he said, and I'm quoting here from John Paxson. We do understand that veterans are important for a young basketball team. The right veterans. The guys that are good teammates, supportive of the young guys, and teach them how to be pros. Those are things that we'll be addressing. I'm sorry, but is he not directly speaking about Jimmy Butler with those comments? Because that's how I read it. And Bulls, like, I got heat on Twitter when I put that article out the other day saying, like, yeah, Paxson totally just, you know, took a veiled shot at Jimmy Butler. So you're like, oh, you're just, you know, you're mixing and twisting his words around. No. If you have any sense of reading into subtext of what people are saying, that is a shot at Jimmy Butler. We need the right veterans around our young teammates. We need the right guys to be supportive and teaching the young guys how to be pros. Clearly, Jimmy Butler was not doing that. And we heard for years, we never heard John Paxson come out and say bluntly, I think Jimmy Butler's a bad leader, because duh, why the hell would he do that? But we've been hearing for years that the Bulls front office thought that Jimmy Butler was lacking in leadership skills. And then he says something like that in a press conference a few days after they trade him away. I mean, come on. The signs are all right there. They did not like Jimmy Butler in that locker room.
And that, and it's consistent with everything that they said before that they decided to do the rebuild. The whole, you know, Jimmy's a great player, but we don't want specifically point out one guy that we're going to build around, we're going to build with. And I think that's a clear indication. That verbiage that Garpax used time and time again, it made you understand that, all right, they value Jimmy Butler, but they don't value him as like a superstar. They don't value him in the same way that they valued maybe Derrick Rose or guys before that were legitimate superstars. And it's just weird. And I think that's the frustrating part, is that these guys, for however long that they're going to be here, they're the ones ruining reputations of themselves around the league. And I don't understand that they think that they can just come out and say these things and then all of a sudden say, yeah, you know what, we're going to have flexibility in a year to try and go out and get all-stars and get guys that are going to legitimately have us compete. Well, how are you going to do that when you literally kick the door down on three of your legitimate assets, got people that are respected in this league and the coach and two players that you just kicked down the door and said, get out of here, we don't want you anymore, and you rub the wrong way? Like, it doesn't work like that. And that's the thing that I don't understand how they don't get. Like, how don't you get that as the front office, that you are a laughing stock? Besides the Knicks and what went on with Phil Jackson, you're a laughing stock in the NBA right now.
Yeah. I mean, other than Phil Jackson and now Dan Gilbert for chasing David Griffin out of Cleveland. I mean,
right.
Those, and then, of course, Sacramento and Vlade Divac and all the struggles
but
they've
Sacramento
gone through.
But had,
like,
a good draft.
They, yeah,
so
they just
even...
had a great draft. Like, people are giving them credit, and rightfully so, because they just had a great draft, and they've got a young, interesting core in place now. But as far as the front offices in the league that people are laughing at, it's the Knicks, it's the Bulls, and it's Cleveland. Because they didn't have a GM on draft night. Like, how the hell are you going to figure out what you're doing as an organization when that's what the situation you find yourselves in? But, I mean, yeah, good God. Look, while we're talking about this, I want to bring this up. Jordan, did you see that somehow, in some way, Gar Forman got a vote for Executive of the Year for those NBA awards that happened earlier this week?
Who votes for that?
We have to go on a manhunt for who the hell voted for Gar Forman. Like, I put out a tweet with that great Tibbs laughing gif being like, yeah, I, like, as part of, to seal the trade, I told Gar I'd give him my Executive of the Year vote. Like, what are the other reasonable explanations for Gar getting an Executive of the Year vote after signing D-Wade and Rondo, after saying he was going to get younger and more athletic, and then trading two of your top six guys in Taj and Doug and getting totally fleeced in that midseason trade with Oklahoma City? How did he even get a single vote? Who the hell voted for him? I want to know.
I'm trying to think of who are the allies that or connections to the Bulls that would even give him a single vote, unless someone is just absolutely trolling him and trolling the Bulls and making fun
of
them.
That's what it had to be. Tibbs voting for him as a joke, right? Like, that's the most logical explanation.
Like, I I don't know either. And, like, that's what I want to know. Like, who votes on these guys as the awards? Is it just all the other executives vote on?
It's all the other GMs. So, like, where is the player awards are also partially voted on by media members? the Executive of the Year award is solely voted by other executives around the league.
So that's weird. Yeah, I saw that too. There's another interesting thing going along with this front office too. I did see this on Twitter. It's picked up some steam. So a guy by the name of Brendan Henderson from Granger, Indiana, has started a GoFundMe page to put up a billboard in downtown Chicago, somewhere near the United Center, that says "Fire Gar Packs." I think the other hashtag says "Get Rid of Reinsdorf." And so obviously that second hashtag is not going to happen, but I think it's funny, and their goal is $15,000, and they're already over halfway there, $7,845 as we're talking right now. And it's under "Let Our Voices Be Heard," hashtag #FireGarPax. It's picked up a ton of steam. There's people literally just donating everything. Like, it's funny, I'm looking at the donations, like a lot of people are submitting $23 for Jordan. But yeah, if this is funny, their last goal, so 10 to 15 grand, this is what they said: "We can afford the ultimate billboard. The billboard will be put in the most high traffic area in Chicago. This would be in a location such as a highway where millions will see it daily. This is the dream, boys and girls, negotiating with advertisers for locations and more specific prices." So it looks like no matter what, they're going to be able to put up a billboard, because it looks like the smallest one would be 2 grand. But they've already got almost 8 grand, so we could probably see a Fire Gar Packs billboard in Chicago.
All right, you know what, Jordan? I'm going to say something right now that's probably not going to go over very well with most of our listening audience, but who the fuck cares? What is this going to accomplish? It's a gigantic waste of money. Everybody who's throwing your money at this GoFundMe right now, might as well flush your money down the toilet. "Oh, it'll be funny. We'll do this billboard. It says FireGar Packs, and it'll be great, and it'll be fun." And then everyone, they'll know just how much the city of Chicago disapproves of the job that the front office is doing. Hey, idiots, wake the fuck up. Everybody already knows. We all are in agreement that the Bulls front office has not done well. They are aware themselves that the city does not think that they have done a good job. What in God's name is a billboard going to accomplish? Nothing. Gigantic waste of money.
I think it's a pretty good idea. I think it's funny, the trolling sense.
What will
sense.
It accomplish? Trolling?
Nothing. Nothing.
You think they give a damn what the greater fans of Chicago think about their job performance? No.
I think it's pretty embarrassing from this standpoint, because if a billboard does get put up, like they said, millions of people are going to drive by it in Chicago. Okay, we get it. People in Chicago get it. We want to fire Gar Packs. But another thing is, like, a bunch of news outlets are going to pick this up. It's going to become national headlines. Like, people are going to go all, like, people that don't follow the Bulls,
Jordan,
are going to realize this is a story.
Jordan,
I'm falling in that rabbit hole, but...
You are so sweetly naive, man. People were saying that about, you remember the big story that was going to grab national headlines when these similar Bulls Reddit crowd had a similar plan halfway through the season? "We're all going to storm the United Center for a nationally televised home
stupid.
Game.
That's so
wearing
different.
Fire Gar Packs t-shirts. We're going to, you know, we're going to buy out a whole section of the Madhouse with our, we're going to wear our Fire Gar Packs t-shirts. It's going to be great. We're going to get national." They like made one or two camera quick looks to people who had those shirts on. At one point, a couple of times you could hear a muffled chant in the game, and that was it. And 2 days later, everybody had forgot it had ever happened.
That's,
I'm sorry.
That's
but
totally different.
How is that different than wasting money on a billboard in Chicago that Gar and Pax and Jerry Reinsdorf don't give two shits about? How is it different?
Because it's, all right, first of all, getting a group of people together to go and storm a game at the United Center, which tickets are not cheap. Obviously, there's a commitment. There's a lack of commitment there. This is just a simple billboard. This is going to hang up there for a while. Like, all they have to do is hire somebody to put this billboard up, and what other effort does anybody else have to do besides donating $10? Like, from a trolling standpoint, the United Center thing on national TV was stupid back in March. Like, obviously, the national TV is not going to show that. They're not going to just blatantly disrespect NBA executives on their home floor in a nationally televised game, especially at a team like the Chicago Bulls. Like, that's not going to happen. I think this is a more creative way. I think if that whole Gar Packs run on national TV didn't happen, maybe this would have been a little bit funnier. I still think it's a good idea. I hope they get the money. I hope they put the billboard right up on 55 or 294 going into Chicago, and people get to look at it until they do fire.
Okay, you know what? I'll give them this. Whoever spawned this idea and the Bulls subreddit folks that are rallying around to make it happen, compared to your previous idea of going into the United Center, buying tickets, and handing the Bulls organization that you're so mad at your hard-earned dollars.
Exactly.
Instead, you're just flushing your money down the toilet to get up some stupid billboard. So I guess it's better than giving the organization you're mad at your money. Instead, you're just throwing it away. So I guess that's technically a step in the right direction.
Hey, if the person that's running this GoFundMe page, if you want to throw a Debatables logo, like, you know, in the bottom right-hand corner of that billboard, we're cool with free advertisements, so you can go ahead and do that if you want.
Just after I totally smashed it for being a completely idiotic idea. This Bulls Fireguard Packs billboard brought to you by the Debatables.
All right, let's after we got off of that now, let's finish up with some other notes and news around the league. For one, Chris Paul going to the Houston Rockets. So now him and James Harden together
in
Houston.
Cannot wait to watch him and CP3 and Harden try to share the ball together. It's going to be hilarious.
It's going to be, it is. And I think it's kind of an odd fit. Like,
it's a very odd fit. Those guys are so, both of them are so ball dominant. Apparently CP3 he's been talking to Harden for the last couple of weeks and is excited to be able to play off the ball. What are you talking about, CP3? You're a ball dominant point guard. What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, I think he's going to realize quickly that that's not going to work. And, James Harden was the best at, literally he's been the best because he was running the point. That's why he's been stat stacking.
Harden has made this insane MVP candidate kind of rise the past couple of years is because D'Antoni just said, fuck the point guard. Harden, you just run our offense. And now you're going to add Chris Paul to that? I'm sorry, that makes no sense to me.
Yeah, and I think, and then now they're pushing to try and get Paul George. That's an even more odd combo. Paul George, James Harden, and Chris Paul in Houston. Is that even still good enough to beat any of the top teams, to beat Golden State again?
I don't know, I will say this. If they somehow land Paul George, and if they can figure out a way to share the ball between those three, CP3 is getting kind of old, but if he stays healthy for a season, he's still one of the better point guards in the league. Him, James Harden, and Paul George together, and if Houston can, manage to keep a couple of shooters to space around them, that now suddenly becomes interesting, as opposed to, obviously, the Warriors own the West. The Spurs, who were up 25 on them, people forget, in that series before Kawhi Leonard went down, are far and away the second-best team in the West. If the Rockets throw CP3 and Paul George into the mix with James Harden, are the Spurs still the second best team in the East? Are the Rockets the second best team in the East if they can figure out how to make those pieces work together? I'm already thinking about the Western Conference playoffs next season, and I am just so stoked.
Yeah, it's crazy, and it's going to be funny where we see these players stack up, and it's crazy too. I was listening to people talk about how the players in the NBA have such leverage over any other players in any other league. We don't see this in any other league where guys decide, we all want to pair up when we want influence on where we're going to go in a situation. You don't see that in the NFL. You don't really see that in the MLB either. You see guys, go to where it's going to help them, where they already have established pieces. I guess it's the easiest to do in the NBA, but I think the influence that the players have now, and what Chris Paul was telling teams that, I'll help the team that I'm leaving by doing this sign and trade instead of just getting up and walking away. I think it's crazy that Paul George can, have an ear in four or five different all-stars around the league and say, let's have talks. Maybe I'll go here and almost play mini GM. And a lot of this, I feel like, attributes back to what LeBron was doing. LeBron, I feel like, is the underlining founding father of doing this.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just, I'm so excited. We're still a few days away, but I mean, July 1st is right around the corner. NBA free agency is going to be insane. I mean, even the offseason stuff that's gone on before free agency has started has been nuts, with this Chris Paul thing and the Butler deal on draft night and all this crazy shit. The Cavs front office situation. I mean, there's all sorts of crazy stuff going on. And you just think from the perspective of a Bulls fan, you're like, we're not getting in on any of this action. The thing that Bulls fans are going to be watching closely as free agency begins is Do they renegotiate with Rondo? Do they talk with Wade about a buyout? And are there any bad contracts out there that that teams that are trying to compete are trying to get rid of that the Bulls are going to happily take on to add draft picks for the future of this rebuild? Like, there's going to be so much crazy shit in this summer of NBA free agency. Where's Blake going? Where's Gordon Hayward going? What's happening with Melo? All this stuff. And the Bulls are just, like, sitting outside looking in, being like, wow, that all looks like some pretty exciting stuff that's about to go down.
And that's what's scary about the Bulls, too. It's like, all right, all these teams now all of a sudden are saying, you know what, screw it. Who cares about, like, super teams don't look like they're going to go away anytime soon, so let's all just try and either, you're either going to tank now or you're going to try and build a super team with two or three all-stars. And that's the way the league is shaping, and the Bulls better hope and cross their fingers that one of these guys, hopefully, knock on wood, Zach LaVine's that all-star that's going to jumpstart this. And in 3 years, when you've got legitimate pieces, hopefully in 3 years, that Zach LaVine is then turned into your star and he's healthy and Chris Dunn comes along nicely and Lauri Markkanen. I'm still very, like, I still don't know what Lauri Markkanen's going to be in the NBA, and I'm hoping that best case scenario, he's an offensive weapon that scores 16 to 18 points a game and, you know, can be somehow they can work with him on the defense, because I know in college he wasn't that great, but it's crazy what the Bulls are doing compared to now what the rest of the league is shifting towards. And what the Bulls were sitting in purgatory kind of debating whether or not what they should do. It's like, all right, the league is trending this way into the point where we're all going to build super teams. So you know what? Now the Bulls are going to decide to rebuild.
Yeah. And honestly, that makes the most sense. And it'll be interesting to see, like, obviously the last decade or so has been owned by this banana boat crew, and who's going where has largely been dictated by where those guys are playing and where they want to play. Wade, LeBron, CP3, Melo. And as they enter the twilight years of their career, it's going, you know, Steph and KD and those Warriors guys are a little bit younger than the Banana Boat crew, so they'll be around a little bit longer than that. But then after that, it's going to be like, I mean, like, where are Karl Anthony Towns and Anthony Davis playing? I mean, like, there's going to be a new generation of people that own the NBA after the Banana Boat crew has lost its last real legs as far as, like, leading teams to titles. Where are the Bulls going to be in the timeline of that rebuild when the sun sets on the Banana Boat crew? I mean, we have no way of knowing what that will be, but, I mean, looking at it right now, a week after a big deal, trading away our superstar Jimmy Butler for a package of young pieces, cross your fingers, people. I mean, just, you know, spin the wheel. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, because I'm looking up north 90 minutes, and that team up in Milwaukee is going to be something special for a while. And that's saying that they can keep everybody there on that team. But, I mean, Giannis looks like legitimately in 3 to 5 years, he's going to be the legitimate star in this league.
Oh,
he's
going
to be the number one player. So you're looking up north seeing that, and that's the same thing in the Eastern Conference.
I mean, like, can the Bucks convince him to stay? Can they put good enough pieces around him to convince him to stay?
Right, and that's another thing, too, and that's going to be something interesting to track, too. It's the same thing as, like, the Bucks took a chance on Giannis, and I don't know what his loyalty's like, and that was the same thing with Butler, like, why Butler wanted to stay in Chicago with him being them taking a chance on Butler. A little bit different where they got picked, but still kind of that same mantra that they both had to establish themselves in this league. But, yeah, that's going to be crazy, and with the Bulls, I don't know exactly what we'll get next year. I think next year is going to be kind of a defining moment in this rebuild, even though it's only the second year. I think what you get in the next year's draft, you better first of all get in the top three picks, and second, I don't know what the Bulls are going to do. They need to unload some of these caps to try and get more picks. That would be the only other thing, and that's obviously the ideal thing, but I don't see anything on this roster that the Bulls are going to be trading.
And I mean, I'm hoping that the Bulls are bad. Like, you have to hope that they're one of the worst teams in the league, because you said, you know, obviously the plan is to try and acquire not just a lottery pick, but a top five, ideally top three lottery pick to get a guy like Michael Porter. But obviously the ping pong balls can be unkind. The ping pong balls were very kind to the Bulls in 2008 when they had less than 2% chance of getting Derrick Rose. you know, maybe the ping pong balls bounce the other way and the Bulls are stuck out of the top five. And also you have to think about the fact that there are going to be some other equally piss poor teams in the league. It's not like Brooklyn's going to get any better. I mean, what, just because the Lakers added Lonzo Ball, they're all of a sudden going to turn into a better team? I'm not convinced about that. Like Orlando, they still look to be like a gigantic mess. There's plenty of there's going to be, like, assuming the Pacers lose Paul George, the Pacers are going to be god awful. The Bulls need to work hard to make sure that they have close to the worst record in the league next season, and I don't know where they're going to stack up there. I'm pegging them somewhere between 20 and 25 wins based on this roster right now today.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comparison. And like you said, there's other teams around this league that are just as bad. And I think, at least for this next year coming up, I think they'll be worse off than the Lakers, like you said. I don't know about Brooklyn. I think Brooklyn is probably going to be hovering around the same where the Bulls are. And that's kind of having a positive outlook that Zach LaVine comes back and plays sometime soon next season. I think that's your only kind of concern, is that he plays really well and the Bulls actually start winning games, or Chris Dunn turns it around in his second year and starts playing well. Like, those are the things that you hope doesn't happen next year. You hope to see progress.
Let's not get crazy. I don't think that is very realistic when you think about the fact that they had one of the best two-way players in the league last season and scratched and clawed their way to 500.
So, yeah. As we finish up, we're going to go to our last thing here before we log off. Joakim Noah and Kenyon Martin have a little bit of beef here. Kenyon Martin went on Power 95.7 and did an interview talking about the Big Three before they started the tournament this weekend.
Which, by the way, have you watched any of that, Jordan? The Big Three tournament?
I did, and it's, you know what? It's entertaining. I'm
loving it. It's really entertaining. But we got to, can we pour one out for White Chocolate right now?
Yeah.
Poor Jason Williams, who, like, you know, broke his femur or whatever it was, like, 2 minutes into the tournament, out 6 to 8 months. Poor Jason Williams.
I think this is going to do really well. I think what the first thing that they're realizing real quick is you can't have guys that have been out of the league for, you know, 5, 7, 8 years, a decade. Like, these older guys, they just, it's proving to be bad because everyone's getting hurt. So they're going to have to do a couple little tweaks, but I think that the energy and the excitement for a summertime basketball type league like this is what NBA fans are thirsting for. And it comes at the perfect time, because we look at it around professional sports, besides the NFL, which is hungry for football 24/7, 365. I think the NBA is the next in line. And if you've got something along the lines like this league that they have constructed with slightly different rules, a half court style of play, something completely different, but still the basketball elements, it's great. And I think if they tweak a couple things, it's going to be around for a while.
There's so many fun and interesting characters involved. And there's, like, trash talking between guys that have beef going back 15, 20 years ago to when they were playing in the league. You've got coach characters like Charles Oakley, Dr. J, you know, yelling at people on the sidelines. I mean, it's really entertaining stuff. And, it, like, they got those four-point, you know, hot spot shots, you know, on the court, like NBA Jam style. From the games that I've watched pieces of thus far, I think it's really enjoyable. And like you said, for the quiet part of the NBA season, it was a brilliant idea for Ice Cube to be like, hey, let's just take a bunch of guys. And that's going back to the whole Kenyon Martin and Joakim Noah thing. What Kenyon Martin was saying in correlation to his ragging on Noah is that, look, a lot of these guys that I'm playing with in this Big Three tournament who are maybe just 1 or 2 or 3 years removed from playing in the big time, a lot of us think we still have what it takes. You know, Steven Jackson's on, I think he's on Kenyon's team, actually. Steven Jackson was going on, you know, Twitter and Periscope and all these places and going on NBA shows last offseason saying, you know, I still got it. I can still play. He was, like, talking about the Bulls being interested in him, which turned out to be a total fabrication on his part. But, like, a lot of these guys think that they still have what it takes to play in the NBA. And that was what Kenyon Martin was saying. Like, dude, I'll play Joakim Noah one-on-one for his contract, because there's no way that fool can beat me. And as much as I love Joakim, I think he's right.
Damn, now you're going after Joe Kim Noah.
Oh, no, I'm going to continue to go after Joe Kim.
Why?
That boy sucked, man.
Oh, my God. I didn't know this was a thing. You don't even give him props for
No.
At no point, rebounding.
When he was with Chicago, they put him in situations to succeed. When they had Derrick Rose and those guys and they was in the East, and they let him put him at the elbow, give him the ball, dribble handoffs. He was passing the ball, and teams overplaying and guard him like he going to shoot the ball from the perimeter.
But they couldn't do that.
Back up off of him. Listen, that man shot a free throw. Look it up.
I seen it.
Face he made. Like, I've never shot a ball and made that face. I've been playing basketball for a long time. Nigga, basketball-wise?
You just think he's trash.
That man's $70 million.
So is that the piece where you're like, this dude got that payday for being
That skill set.
What's his value, you think? What would you have paid him?
That skill set?
That, at that time, too, when Phil gave him 70, you would have given him?
The minimum. Listen, I plan for his contract. Playing for his contract right now.
I don't think
off
he's going to do that. I don't think he's going
to
do
off the couch.
He's not doing that.
Well, that's like, it's unfair for like Joakim's hurt. So right now, like, if they're both healthy, I think you're right too. I think like you look at that. Who did Steven Jackson say? He did this too last year. He said he was going to play. He would play
Chandler Parsons.
Oh, there you go. Chandler Parsons.
Yeah, he challenged Chandler Parsons.
Oh my God.
And Kenyon Martin was like, hey, yeah, you know, my boy Steven Jackson challenged Parsons. I'm going to do the same thing right here on your show. Like, right off the couch right now, I'll play Joakim for that contract.
Boy, suck.
Poor Joakim. He's just, you know, and you know, he did do it to himself a little bit. I mean, he got suspended and they talked about that too, but I think it was just like literally throwing, I don't know, it was just stupid.
I mean, the guy had off-season shoulder surgery and then he came in and was playing on a bum knee. He got shut down with another knee surgery, arthroscopic knee surgery, in, you know, like February or March, whatever that was. Now he's had a shoulder surgery on his other shoulder to start this offseason. He still has half of that suspension to serve once he's healthy and ready to play next season. We were hearing leading up to draft night that the Knicks were trying to package him along with Kristaps Porzingis in a potential trade. I mean, and I don't even think we've mentioned yet in this show that Phil Jackson got the boot from New York, from the New York Knicks today on Wednesday. But I mean, if you're talking about missteps made by Phil Jackson, giving that Joakim Noah $70 million, 72, if we're being exact, I mean, that's a terrible deal. Why are you giving Joakim Noah that much money when you see how worn down he is?
Well, yeah, and Phil Jackson fleeced the Knicks, like literally fleeced them out of all that money. Didn't even care about the job. I thought it would have been an icing on the cake if he would have traded Porzingis and then gotten fired. Like what Knicks fans would have been, they would have rioted. But I think that's funny too. But yeah, this Joakim Noah comments kind of funny. Kenyon Martin spouting off, and this is another thing for the big three is Ice Cube brought in and Allen Iverson too brought in guys that he knew would go out there and help them promote this league, which is wonderful. And guys that are outspoken and guys that feel like, you know, that they can start something up like this. And I think this is overthrowing remember the tournament where they had, you know, college players that didn't quite make the NBA or whatever,
right,
former
right.
stars, they came together and played for $1 million in a tournament. I think this could overthrow the tournament. And to me, this is a good idea. They need something in the summer besides just the summer league to watch, which not even that's gotten picked up some interest. But
right,
I think
like the casual NBA fan would much rather watch names of NBA guys who are retired, whose names they recognize, than a bunch of D-League kids who are probably not going to make an NBA roster next season.
Very true. And I think one more thing on the big three that I think that they need to do next year is put these games on live TV. Like, don't tape it a day delay and then air that. Like, no, like we're in 2017 now. We're all going to, people who care about this are going to get updates on their phone and be able to see what's going on in real life. Like, I feel like in the summer, Fox Sports or ESPN or somebody has enough room, enough time slot to put this on a weekend spot in the summer when you're not playing baseball or when you don't have baseball scheduled or something. Like, put this on air. Like, people will watch this. It's proven already. It's gotten huge love on social media. So someone needs to air these games live next year.
Yeah, obviously there's a draw for it. I'm pretty sure they said, I saw that there were well over 10,000 people for the first couple of games at the Barclays Center last weekend. I mean, That's more than halfway to a full packed out, sold out house for an actual NBA game. And this is half court, 3-on-3 retired players. And I'm sorry, Brooklyn Nets fans, I got to do it to you. I lived in New York for a while. Anytime the Bulls were in town, and even sometimes when it was just a random off night, my brother and I would go to Barclays because those tickets are dirt cheap because they're trying to usher people into that stadium. I mean, even like my brother and I went to some of those Bulls-Nets playoff games when that was, 2013, when they faced off in the first round. That place was half full for a fucking playoff game. And you just got it half full for Ice Cube's big 3-on-3 tournament. I mean, come on now.
Yeah, that attendance for the big 3 tournament was more than their combined attendance all season for the Nets. But
I mean, that's only a slight exaggeration.
So, I mean, I don't know. But yeah, this is a good idea. I like it. And we'll continue to follow it a little bit. Michael Sweetney's on a team, former Bull, too. I think that's the only former Bull playing
Mike
in the
James,
big three.
Baby.
Oh, and Mike James
is playing.
Who's the Mike James connection that we had a couple weeks ago? We were talking. His name came up again from somebody that signed. Oh, Jimmy Butler signed with that, his agent, too. Mike James' agent. So random. But yeah, I think that's about gonna do it here. Next week we're gonna talk a little bit more about, as we get into free agency, talk about contract situations and possible teams that are gonna look to dump contracts on the Bulls and what kind of assets the Bulls could get to maybe, you know, improve this team with picks and such. So we'll have all of that next week for you. But you can follow us on Twitter @DebatableBulls, @JordanCMalley, and @Bulls_Peck. Download our podcast, subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. Anywhere you find podcasts, you're going to find us. All of our content is over at almightyballer.com. Make sure to check us out there. If you love the NBA, there's tens of other shows on there, show for every single team. So if you enjoy listening to the NBA, go to listen to almightyballer.com. We're on Dash Radio. If you're listening to us on Dash Radio right now, thank you so much. Tell your friends to download the Dash Radio app. But for Jordan and Matt, we're out. Have a great 4th of July. We'll see you next week.
Who was on crack?
Stay in your lane.
Will you stop it?
Don't apologize for teammates. That don't make any sense.
I remember at nights I would come in the gym. You know, I'm thinking by myself, and I look up, and I see P on the treadmill.
What?
Everybody used to say, who was the best? Michael Jordan or LeBron?
Who did you think was the best? Who did you think was the best?
Kobe or LeBron?
Who did you think was the best?
Guess what the story is now? Who's better, LeVar or Michael Jordan?
I don't think about no damn LeVar.
That was some good nuggets. Good thing somebody told you them.
That's not the first time you've said those are some good nuggets either.
The Debatables, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories of the week. The Debatables, live on Dash Radio every Thursday. New episodes available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and at almightyballer.com.